Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The anniversary of the executions of 38 Dakota warriors is coming up. 158 years ago, on December 26th, the warriors were hanged in Mankato, Minnesota for their alleged part in the U.S. Dakota War of 1862. Two other men were also hanged later. Descendants and others remember the Dakota 38 plus 2 each year. We'll talk with some of those who organized the commemoration. That's coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Gwich'in people are seeking to stop development in the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, a sacred place, a foundation of their culture and way of life. Those seeking to protect the area are concerned about caribou, other wildlife, and the environment. Bernadette Dementev with the Gwich'in Steering Committee this week in a statement said they'll never stop fighting.
And as Gwich'in people, you know, we don't allow anybody to tell us how to live and what to do.
This week in federal court, tribal plaintiffs represented by the Native American Rights Fund sought a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction to prohibit the Trump administration from approving seismic exploration and issuing leases in the coastal plain, proposed to begin in January. Supporters of the sale, including politicians, seek jobs, revenue, and energy independence. In Minnesota, indigenous and environmental groups are continuing to demonstrate near the Mississippi River in Aiken County opposing construction of the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline. This week, nearly two dozen people were arrested, the Star Tribune reports. Indigenous and environmental groups have been giving daily updates on social media showing people standing in the way of construction, including tree sitters saying they're protecting the water and the environment. They're calling on the state's governor and President-elect Joe Biden to stop Line 3. The company says replacement of the oil pipeline is in dire need. Supporters seek jobs and economic boosts. Regulators approved the final permit on December 1st. Indigenous and environmental groups and some Minnesota tribes are seeking court action as construction is expected to ramp up. Tribes across the country are continuing to receive COVID-19 vaccines this week. Five Red Lake Tribal Council members in Minnesota volunteered to be the first to get the vaccine on Wednesday. Red Lake Hospital healthcare workers will begin to receive vaccines along with staff and elders at the nursing home. Tribal leaders are working with the hospital on vaccine plans for tribal citizens as they become available. Other tribal leaders are also volunteering to be among the first in their communities to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Gwendina Lee Gatewood, chair of the White Mountain Apache Tribe in Arizona, was vaccinated this week. On Wednesday, she said she feels fine other than a sore arm. Acoma Pueblo in New Mexico began COVID-19 vaccine shots for healthcare workers Wednesday. The Mescalero Apache Tribe in New Mexico received vaccines in the afternoon to vaccinate doctors, nurses, and other hospital staff. President Gabe Aguilar encouraged the community in a video message urging people to stay vigilant and taking precautions as they anticipate to get vaccines for the community in early 2021.
As a community, we came together, you know, and we're not done yet, but I'm very proud because our numbers show for it. We're all doing our part to stay home. Our numbers are dropping, you know, for a few days in October, our numbers were like 20 a day. You know, I'm thankful that it's gone down to some at two a day, maybe five, you know, but I'll be more thankful when it gets down to zero.
Tribal health programs and urban Indian organizations are getting the vaccine through the Indian Health Service or states. More than 300 programs are on the IHS COVID-19 distribution list. According to the Indian Health Service, tribes in Alaska are working with the state. The Tanana Chiefs Conference in Fairbanks alerted the community Wednesday the Pfizer vaccine arrived and was being put in a freezer to store until ready for distribution. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwutui via Skype. Much of present-day Minnesota is traditional Dakota territory. The story of how it was stolen is a tragedy that is not included in many mainstream history books. One of the culminating moments in the efforts to rid the state of Native people was the execution of 38 men on December 26, 1862. It remains the largest mass hanging sanctioned by the United States. It follows the U.S. Dakota War and a series of oppressive policies by the federal government. Every year about this time, Dakotas commemorate the executions of the Dakota 38 plus two other chiefs who were hanged 3 years later. The annual 330-mile memorial horseback ride from the Lower Brule Reservation in South Dakota to Mankato was canceled because of the pandemic. But organizers are finding creative ways to continue the commemoration of the event. We'll remember this part of Dakota history and discuss ways organizers are promoting healing. And you can join us today. What do the Dakota 38 plus 2 mean to you? How do you honor them? Share your thoughts today by dialing in to 1-800-996-2848. We're going to start off in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have Kate Bean with us. She is the director of Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society, and she is Flandreau Santee Dakota. Our pleasure to have her here. Kate, welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, Mitakepi. Thank you for having me.
And Kate, I really appreciate you being here to give us a historical view into this. And let's talk a little bit, for those who know absolutely nothing about the Dakota 38 plus 2, what are some of the things you start telling this story with?
Well, there's a lot to say. For a lot of years, this history wasn't talked about, and there, you know, is definitely a need for truth-telling when it comes to this history. I think that oftentimes when the history is told, there's this narrative that gets told that the Dakota War started with an egg incident enacted in Minnesota in August of 1862. And I would argue that the war actually began when intruders first came upon our lands, much earlier than that. And when our land became occupied by others, when we look at the history of broken promises and deceptive agreements, the broken treaties, there's a longstanding history there back to the Treaty of 1805, where amounts of promises were made with, you know, and I think a lot of tribal people can relate to that history where some of the signers of those documents didn't speak English. There's questions about translations. There's questions about who was chosen as a leader within a community. And it was just one band that was represented within that first initial treaty. And yet, you know, the term Sioux often gets used as if the Dakota, Lakota, and Nakota people are all one band of people. And there are many bands of the Acheti Shakoi. The Dakota War was primarily warriors from the Berewakantuan and Wakpekute bands. And, you know, this history, the way that it gets taught is not the way that we talk about this history. The way that we talk about this history within our communities and families is that we had, our families were faced with starvation. We were faced with being moved over and over again losing our lands because of these deceptive agreements. And our people were starving. The Civil War ended up happening in 1862, and a lot of the annuities that had been promised didn't come. And our children were starving, our families were struggling, and we had some leaders who determined it was time to declare war. Initially, before that, there was an incident where some warriors had gone off and stolen some eggs in Acton, but that wasn't, you know, that was kind of a spark. But that was not what started the war. You know, what started the war was this longer history. And there were a number of battles that happened throughout this period of time in places like New Ulm and Fort Ridgely and other areas. And what ended up happening is that the repercussions of this era, Henry Sibley, who was a governor or early governor, the first governor of the state of Minnesota, had actually promised our Dakota people that if they turned themselves into the United States government, that they would be, they would not face consequences. And we had hundreds and hundreds of Dakota people who were not involved in the war turn themselves in for safety, primarily women and children and elders. And they were imprisoned. 38 of our men were executed at Mankato. 1,700 of our women, children, and elders were force marched to a concentration camp below Fort Snelling. And our people were removed in the Dakota Removal Acts of 1862 through 63. And our families have been separated and displaced from each other since then in a lot of ways. A lot of our community members did fight to stay here in Minnesota, or they came back. And I'm proud to say we have four tribal communities still here in Minnesota, but my tribe's in Flandreau. A number of our tribes are still outside of the state, and we have another number of relatives up into Canada as well.
And Kate, I understand not too long ago they were, well, I don't know, as it said, welcome back. Do you have any knowledge on that?
Well, there was in 2012 what we call the sesquicentennial, or what they call the sesquicentennial. Which was the 150th anniversary of the Dakota War. And initially there was a call for a lot of celebrations throughout the state of Minnesota. We had a number of community scholars and leaders who said this is not something to celebrate within the state. And there were a number of people who were very frustrated by that so-called celebration of the 150th anniversary. And there were a number of Dakota people who organized and who often calls in to the American Calling, as well as Frankie Jackson and J.B. Weston and people in our communities organized a Legacy of Healing event at Flandreau, where a couple of us here on this call are from, to welcome people back to the state of Minnesota. Flandreau sits on the other side of Pipestone, and when you come in, the border is right there, and there are a number of people there to welcome Dakota people. And it was a really... it was a powerful event. I was there with my father, and to walk back into Minnesota, I was very, very hesitant, to be honest. I'm always weary. You know, I'm always weary of what's the action behind this? What does this actually do in terms of welcoming us back when we don't have any land rights, when our lands are no longer here, there's been no reparations. But in walking across the border with my father and seeing a group of elderly women just weeping and realizing the impact of the symbolism of that, it was a powerful moment. It was a very powerful moment.
And maybe you remember some of this history because you either participated in that walk across the border, across the political border between states. You have some thoughts, and the Dakota War led up to what we are talking about today. If you want to join us, dial in now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Kate, what led to the 38 who were hanged?
Well, so what ended up happening is out of the people who turned themselves into Henry Sibley's army, there were, I think, 303 who were put to trial, very short trials that lasted literally 3 to 5 minutes apiece. There was confusion over names. We have kinship names in our communities, and there was confusion over that, not on our part, on the the part of those who were holding these trials. And Henry Sibley oversaw the trials. And what ended up happening was that of those 303 that were set to be executed, the number was brought down from that number to 38 by Abraham Lincoln, who felt he could not execute that many individuals. And there was a lot of tension between individuals in terms of that decision and some frustration from some of the settlers, the white settlers in Minnesota. And there were lynch mobs that went out to attack Dakota community members who were imprisoned, who hadn't participated in the war. And I think it's important to mention, you know, there's some great resources out there. The transcripts of the trials are out there to see just how unjust these trials were, if you can even call them trials. The fact is, we know today that many of those 38 did not even participate in the war, and that of those that did, it was a time period that Dakota people declared war in order to ensure our existence. What I've been taught by my grandparents was that our relatives were patriots and that we were fighting for our own survival.
Well, Kate, I appreciate you sharing this part of history. Is this part missing from your understanding or what you were taught about this time period, about the Dakota War? How does it compare with what you just heard? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You are also invited into this conversation, and you can share your thoughts, and maybe there's something you want to share. Maybe there is something that your family told you about all of this. Maybe you are a direct descendant of some of those 38, and you can tell us about it by dialing in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Today's program, we are featuring a historian as well as others who connect directly to those 38. Often there is a memorial ride commemorating the lives of these lost ones, and this year it's been put on hold. We'll hear about why. And we'll also hear about the connections and also how this plays into current day Native identity. You can give us a ring. We look forward to hearing from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you want to share maybe how this parallels some of the things that have gone on in your own tribal nation, maybe you're not Dakota, but you're relating to what you heard and you want to share some thoughts, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to hearing from you today, and also tribute to all those who keep these kind of histories alive by retelling and sharing.
The Red and Blues Band is offering its gift of song to the world with their latest album, Resistance is Fuel. Here's some of it.
We have to help this hope survive. We have to be the sacrifice.
Join us for our December Music Maker with the Red and Blues.
Hamitakipiki, Leo Makakini Tiwahe, which was on it happy, Pasio. Hechanokitaku, Zania Washte, Glustanoki Hippelo. La Kovich was on TL Yayo, Samasola at Shihanta, Lel Yayo, healthcare.gov. Nishtala Mas Abkhayo, 1-800-318-2596. Le Wot Khaniki, Medicare to Medicaid or Tietan Hiyapelo. Ho Hechetuelo.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesleta Pueblo. And we are talking about the Dakota 38 plus 2 today. Every year, the Dakota tribes and descendants honor these Dakota leaders and warriors who were executed in 1862. And how do you honor them? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and go to our phone lines. We're going to say hi to Jim, who is in Orange City, Iowa today. Thank you for dialing in, Jim. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Good morning. Yeah, West State, everybody out there. I'm calling from, we're on our way to Orange City right now. We are actually doing a Dakota 38, not a 38 ride, but we're doing Dakota Exile ride because we're riding to from Santee, Nebraska, because a lot of the survivors were sent to Santee, Nebraska. but we're riding to Mankato. We're on our way now. We've been doing this since the 14th. We've been camping out in teepees and trailers. It's been a little struggle because of this is an entirely new ride because we still wanted to do something. We wanted to do something because we knew the other ride was canceled because of the COVID. But a lot of us that are on this ride are in recovery, like myself. I'm in recovery. And we wanted to do something to keep that momentum going for the people because to have something like this, we need things like this to keep going, to live, for healing. And, you know, and I've been on that 38 ride. I was last year on the 38 ride with Wolford Keeble. I've been on it for a while. We've also done other rides since then, you know, since starting out on that 38 ride. It's kind of spawned other rides since then.
And Jim, for you, just knowing, you know, what happened and remembering to make sure that people don't forget to tell true history. And as you are there with those who are on this ride, what is the sentiment? What are your thoughts?
Well, we always try to teach the little ones. We've got a lot of little younger people on this ride that don't know this history. That's the hard part. They don't know the history. It's not taught in the books. We need to teach them. We need to raise this awareness on this ride, what happened. What really happened, you know, like I was here, the Dakota War, you know, we never declared war in the United States. And this was a war. We were fighting for survival. We were starving to death. People don't realize that. You know, they, in the United States said that we declared war on them. We didn't declare war on them. That's the hard part. We need to do what we can to raise this awareness, to bring this healing to the people.
Well, you're bringing some of that today, Jim. Best to you and all the writers. And again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to take another call. We have Matthew in Radcliffe, Kentucky, tuned in. Matthew, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Good afternoon. Welcome, my relatives. I tell you, I'm from Kentucky area, but originally I'm from Long Plains First Nation, Manitoba, Canada. After the exile time, a lot of the Dakota people moved north, and that's where I came from.
And Matthew, how do you commemorate this time, or do you have a direct connection to maybe one of the descendants, anything like that?
Yeah, what was amazing being a part of this ride is, besides the ride itself, I always say whenever Indian people get together, Indian things happen. We had some ceremonies, and in the ceremony, I was able to learn of my relation to Ayachika, who was one of the Dakota 38. So for me, every year, going back and participating, riding for healing, has always been paramount to me. And the value of it has been seen in the last few years with the communities that have reached out for the exact thing that we pray for when we ride.
And Matthew, your thoughts to those who are commemorating this time in history?
Well, one of the things I'd like to say about that is that, for one, you know, we can never forget our history. We can never forget the past. And it's very important that we learn and recognize our history and our past. Most importantly, so we don't make those same kind of mistakes moving forward. One of the biggest inspirations of why I even went on the ride the first time was because our Uncle Jim Miller said that from this point forward, it's not about who's to blame. It's about how we're going to move forward as a people, bring healing. And had we done that ride just 1 year and never went back, the reciprocation from the community would never have been the same. We would never have gotten to see some of the things happen over the years that we've all been able to be a part of. So I look towards the future, you know, and understanding our past. A lot of things were done wrong, and we can't deny that. But we can make a better future, and there's things that we can do as people to represent ourselves in a good way. And as a rider of the Dakota 38 ride, I think that's been the most important part of being a part of all of this with our relatives is the power that comes when we get to pray with a horse for the kind of healing that we look for as a people to make a better future for our children. I think ultimately all of us trying to feel that way about these prayer events.
Mm. Matthew, thank you for your call. Best to you there in Kentucky. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. We got one more caller to bring you. We got Melvin, who is in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in today. Melvin, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
Well, good morning. I live here on the Santee Sioux Reservation, where the descendants of the 38 were sent, and many of the ones that ended up in Davenport prison came here, and we ended up with different groups here. The ones that stood up, the ones that testified against them, the loyalists, we had what we call the cut hair. They all ended up here, four or five different groups. The group from Hazelwood came, ended up here. So there was a lot of problems here after the war, too. That's why Sisson, the people from Planju left. The people that are in Planju now were here, but they left here and made their way back that way. But the other part about it is we need to start telling the true history. A lot of times I hear people on the radio or at speaking events, and it's people from Sisson. Well, they weren't even in the war, you know. So we need to start being able to tell ourselves the truth of what really happened during that conflict up there and our removal and the murder of our 38, you know. And it's really, really hopefully in the future we can get all the Dakota people and learn the true history of what happened, because I pretty much know the history down here, but our Canadian brothers, I know very little about our relatives up there. Hopefully we can get together and share this information on the history. So thank you.
All right, Melvin, good to hear your voice. Thank you for reaching out there in Santee, Nebraska. Again, the invitation is there for you, too, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848. With us today out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, is Kate Bean, and she is the Director of Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. Our pleasure to have her here. Also on the line, too, out of Porcupine, South Dakota, is Jim Miller. He is the dreamer of the Dakota 38 Plus 2 Memorial Ride. He is Cheyenne River Sioux. And it's our pleasure to have him here. Jim, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Also on the line from Flandreau, South Dakota, is Josette Tubles. She is a descendant of one of the Dakota 38, and she is Mittawakaton, Dakota. Our pleasure to have her here. Josette, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And so we're learning a little bit of how this time and these lives are being remembered and honored. And Josette, you have a direct connection to one of the Dakota 38. Tell me about that connection and why remembering this history is important.
I am, my mother is Dakota. I was born and raised on the Pine Ridge Reservation. I come from the Tatanka Nupa Teoshpaye on my dad's side. And on my mother's side, I am from Mahpia Inaji Standing Cloud from Prior Lake. Also Mahpia Wichasta Cloudman here in Eastern on the Santee Reservation here in Flandreau. So growing up, it was I never knew my Dakota history or heritage. I was raised West River, as we call western part of South Dakota on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and my mother never spoke of being Dakota. Her and my dad, I know, spoke the language My dad spoke Lakota. And so I never knew that. I always thought I was Lakota from Pine Ridge. And my mother, as we got older, then she had told me that I was an enrolled member here in Flanju. And that her descendant, she descended from Prior Lake. And my grandmother and my great-grandfather, Gus Standing Cloud, and my grandmother, Sarah, they had left and ended up when the uprising, they had left. And they ended up coming here to Homestead. And that's where my grandmother met my grandfather, Samuel H. Weston, who's a descendant of Cloudman. So it was an eye-opener for me. I was shocked because we were never taught our Dakota side. So when I moved here to Flanju, I started researching in that. But long story short, I would have never known this if never really got to know my relatives if it wasn't for the Dakota 38 plus two Kiksuye ride. I came on it in 2007, and that's where I learned that I have a lot of relatives, and I eventually moved over here.
We big families, they continue to grow and grow. And with that, Josette, just knowing the history connected to your ancestor, what are your thoughts that this actually took place?
About the war or the ride?
Those that were hanged, that this was something that was sanctioned by the U.S. government.
It really touched me. My very first year on the ride, I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand how that could happen, how they could just take our people and hang them. It was devastating to me. It really affected me. I was overwhelmed by it. And through the years, I've gotten my Dakota name. I've experienced so much being on the ride. That's for me. Everything that I've experienced, you know, I know that's for me. And I try to pass it down to my children and grandchildren because they need to know this. They need to know the history of what's happened to our people. Learning about my grandma and my great-grandfather and my relatives in Prior Lake, that I've been wanting to go there and go to the encampments and feel and try and understand, because it's for me, being an elder now, it's just like, what happened? Why did this happen? You know, what can we do to help our younger generation? So this ride is really important as far as me being able to pass things down to the younger ones. I've been working with children for many, many years, and I retired this year from the Flanju Indian School. I was there for 11 years, and in that time, I've had the opportunity to, with the documentary and inviting my brother Jim and my sister Alberta to talk with the students that I worked with and share a meal and watch the documentary and let them experience just knowing that this took place. Mm-hmm. So I feel that it's a healing thing for our younger people. It's going to
and
be.
I'm glad you're pointing that out directly, because when you have history this heavy, and to understand, interpret, and just know what's being covered up sometimes through the way history is taught, that's a real heavy thing. And healing. Jim, talk to me more about healing.
Well, you know, our generations, you know, where all this is handed down, the trauma, the PTSD, the internalized oppression. You know, we once we study history and learn about the Dakota 38 plus 2, and then, you know, try to work on ourselves. Myself, I've been sober for 36 years. And boy, did I have to work on myself. And I think that's why the Creator gave me that dream to have the Dakota 38 to have this ride. And I just want to say one thing about it, dreams. There's dreamers in every tribal nations. And we, in Indian country, we go by signs, visions, and dreams. And Wakantanka picked me to have this dream, and I asked, and I begged him, and I said, why me? And it came back, and the people said, you know, they knew that you would fulfill it. So with that, you know, in the healing part of it, it's, you know, we, especially with the horses, we can't forget the horses. Our people were so strong back in the day that they communed with their horses. The horses talk to us, we talk to them, and we're trying to bring that back to our younger generation.
And Jim, when you understand, you know, these different teachings and being the elder, I think now a lot of us in our Native communities are understanding, if we've never taken that moment to teach some of this to our young people, how are they going to know it from our own voices, from our own thoughts? And this is a part of it. I want to hear more coming up after the break. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. These phone lines will stay open, but we're ready for you. Dial in.
The Institute of American Indian Arts presents the virtual holiday marketplace now through the new year. A variety of items from the IAIA community are now available for purchase at iaia.edu/marketplace, who support this show.
Native Teaching Aids collaborates with tribes to create games and apps which focus on language, culture, and history. Native Teaching Aids can create fun, engaging materials for your community. Further information and online store at nativeteachingaids.com, who support this show.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about the legacy of the Dakota 38. What do they mean to you? What does that time in history mean to you as well? There is still time to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And before the break, I introduced you to Jim Miller. He is the dreamer of the Dakota 38 plus 2 Memorial Ride. Our pleasure to have him here. He joins us today from Porcupine, South Dakota. And Jim, you were talking about the importance of teaching this history and also recognizing those we're related to, including the horse. Anything you want to add with that?
Yeah. One of the things that I found was that the Removal Act of Congress, March 3rd, 1863, you know, there's still that bounty on our heads, of $200 bounty on our heads in Minnesota. So what we're trying to do actively is to get that off the books in Minnesota and South Dakota. So we have a lot of healing to do, all of us. So, you know, you know, I just want to tell all the people. Could I add something here?
Go for it, Jim.
I just wanted to, send out a Wopila Tanka, a big thank you to these relatives that passed: Gus Heigo, Donnie Belgard, Leland Spotted Bird, Charlie Forbear, Ray Shepherd, Elvis Provost. All these people that were leaders on the ride that showed us how to love and showed us how to take care of horses and showed us how to be Dakota again.
Thank you for remembering them with us, Jim. And you said the word leaders, and that's something that of those people who appear in the list of the 38 and then the other two, those people were seen as leaders. And when we lose a leader, there is a lot that happens, you know, in our community and just even in our cultural relations too. And so, Jim, This, I understand, goes straight into why people take that commitment to make this ride usually. This year, it's being put on pause. And anything you want to share about what this ride means, even when it isn't happening?
Well, one of the things about the staff for the Dakota 38 has its own spirit. And this year we came together as a family and we said we're going to rest the staff. So I have it here at my home and I smudge it every day. Because it has a spirit, I smudge it every day and I take care of it. And when we have a sweat, inipi, we take it and we put it in the sweat and pray with it. So us here, we're going to do other things. We have our own little ride. We're going to do fasting. We're going to keep on prayers for the people now with the ride that's going on right now, like the Bigfoot Memorial Ride, which is in existence now, and the Dakota Exile Ride. Little do they know that a lot of us are praying for them, and we're fasting, and I live 8 miles from Wounded Knee. A lot of my relatives on my mother's side were slaughtered there. And a lot of my relatives on the Dakota side were hung at Mankato. So I have a lot of offerings and a lot of understanding and love for the people that are continuing. But it's to rest the ride this year. We didn't want to spread the disease, or we didn't want to pick up the disease from anybody on the route. But I do pray for these rides that are going on right now, you know, and wish them all the best. And I want to tell them all that I'm proud of them and that I love them and that a lot of people are praying for these two rides that are going on right now.
And Jim, anytime I hear of, you know, these moments where atrocities were done to our people, and it seems that there was a lot that was done during this time of year, and even close to the holidays, and this is something that a lot of Native nations remember of some of these atrocities that happen. And Jim, when you think about this time period and what led up to what is making it into some history books that this happened on December 26th, I think of our ancestors and what they were going through, and we look at the date today. The things that lead up to some of these moments, those were some of the times that were the hardest and some of the things that our ancestors were thinking, knowing what was going to be coming around the corner. And that's a lot to process. And what is your thought, or how do we start thinking about this to understand it and think about it in a way where, you know, we need to heal while we think about it? Because just even hearing this story today, I've learned about it a long time ago, and I'm learning more today, but it's really heavy when we think about these things. And maybe any thoughts too about how we talk about these heavy histories? Jim?
Oh man, that's a tough question, but I'll try my best to answer that. And it's, we have to go back and reintroduce our youth to the horses, you know, and get the horses into school instead of in an infraction or somebody making a boo-boo in school, send them out to the horses. My granddaughter was the one that brought that to my attention. Instead of writing 100 lines or whatever you got to do, whatever the disciplinary action is, send them out and, you know, be with the horses. You know, I don't know, you know, what more we could do. You know, it's got to be collectively from all of us, all nations. And especially with, even for me, as a Lakota man, when I first had this dream, everybody in Dakota land said, how come a Lakota is having a dream for the Dakotas? Come to find out that we're the oldest nation is the Dakota. The oldest history is Dakota. And I'm just finding that out, and I'm 72 years old. I'm just now finding all this out. And that, you know, it's the Washitu is named this with our dialect, Lakota and Nakota, because that's the way it sounded then to them. But really, we're all Dakota. So we have to come together as one nation. You know, and like Sitting Bull said it best, we got to put our hearts together and our minds together and see what life we could make for our children.
Jim, thank you for those words, and thank you for being here. And we thank you for tuning in, too. If you want to join us, you can dial now 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Jim, if this ride were to be going on, where would things be right now? I know the 21st also has a very significant time in the ride. Anything you want to share?
Well, if it was going on now, it would be in Flanju and near our sacred Pipestone Quarry at Pipestone, Minnesota. And I just want to give a shout out to the people all along the route that helped us and cooked for us. And that's healing in itself when you have these Washichus, these white people coming across. And, you know, it's like Wopila to Upper Sioux, the elders, the Lower Sioux with their elders, Crook Sioux Tribe, Flanju, Santee Sioux Tribe, Sistan, Wapton, Oyate. You know, all these people that took time out of their busy days to come and cook for us, feed us, and then give us encouraging words. So I want to thank all of them while I have an opportunity, and I want to thank you for airing this today for us.
Well, Jim, it's my honor. Thank you for being here. And there's a lot of history that goes along with this. And I really appreciate, too, how Kate Bean talked about what led up to this date and what happened after. Let's get to that as well. Kate Bean is here with us out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and she is with the Minnesota Historical Society. Kate, thank you for being with us. And in our introduction and different parts of the show, we say 38 plus 2. Definitely tell us what the plus 2 means.
So the plus two stands for the two Dakota warriors who were hanged on November 11, 1865, and that is Waukon Ojanjan and Jacques Peyna. Those two individuals helped lead other community members, including my family, out of Minnesota. They were chased by Sibley's army out of the state when there were bounties on our heads. And there was a group of people who left together for safety. And they are two of the leaders who, you know, though there were many leaders within that, those are the they were drugged and brought back across the Canadian border where they were in hiding. Some scouts found them and drugged them and brought them across the border and took them to Fort Snelling, where they were executed on November 11th, 1865. And a lot of their descendants, you know, are honoring them this time as well. And, you know, those plus two are incredibly important to remember. And all of our relatives who suffered during this time and sacrificed during this time are important to remember. And for me, when I think of those two, I think of all of our grandparents who fought so hard for us to stay and for us to survive. My family, we take part in the Dakota 38 Memorial Run. That's a run that has been going on for over 30 years, which was started by the Owen family, Amos Owen, and continued on by Art and Ray Owen. And, you know, teaching our children about our relatives who were chased out of the state, who faced prosecution, who were imprisoned. My grandparents were imprisoned at Davenport, Iowa. You know, this was my grandparents' grandparents, and I'm not that old. And this is very close history. And I think that the public needs to understand why it's so close, and they need to understand better how this history continues to impact us today.
And Kate, there was something just as heavy that happened after these Dakota warriors, their lives were taken, and connections to the Mayo Clinic. Any knowledge on that?
Yeah, so the bodies of the 38 were later excavated for scientific research study. And I know Melvin Houston, who called in, he's personally involved with some of that history of making sure that the Mayo Clinic stability. You know, the Mayo brothers, those doctors who came in and studied, used our ancestors' remains for study. You know, that's a very real history. And not a lot of people know about it. And thinking about, you know, I work for a large institution, the Minnesota Historical Society. The founders of the institution, Alexander Ramsey, called for the extermination of my people. Henry Sibley chased my family out of the state. You know, and these large organizations, institutions, you know, these places of power need to take accountability for their roles within this history. And there needs to be broader acknowledgement. And that's what a lot of our people are working on today, a broader acknowledgement, uncovering the truth, and also healing. You know, there's a delicate balance between truth-telling, making sure that knowledge is known, and looking towards the future. You know, we have these beautiful kids. My kids are part of the Dakota Immersion School here in Minneapolis, and to hear them speak the language is a beautiful thing. And to let them know the power and the strength of where they come from is a beautiful thing. And so being able to speak the truth and show people that strength is so important.
And Kate, when we do say that, you know, there needs to be accountability and working there with the Minnesota Historical Society, how do you do that in different institutions of, you know, making sure that the right history is taught? And maybe this goes for other institutions that aren't putting forward history or employing somebody like yourself who's committed to telling the truth. Any thoughts or suggestions on how we do turn this around with other institutions?
Well, efforts need to be Native-led, and I think that's where we've seen a recent change within the institution I work at, is there are more Native people working within the institution and working with people outside of the institution, people who are holding, you know, the feet to the fire, so to speak. You know, it's incredibly important that these institutions be challenged, and it's really important that we work together, both inside and outside of these spaces, in order to move the dial. You know, there's so much power within these institutions, and there is a shift that is happening and needs to continue to happen. You know, we still have collections and remains within museums across the country. We still have, you know, a lack of honest truth-telling within curriculum in our schools. And for us as Native people, we have to be able to sort of enter these institutions and figure out how to help direct that change. My grandfather, Charles Eastman Ohiesa, he helped do that in his era. And we're still trying to do that today. You know, these need to be Native-led efforts, and we have to work together.
Yes, lots of work to be done. And Kate Bean, we're glad you're doing some of it. Thank you for joining us today here on the program. Also, thank you to all of our guests, Jim Miller and Josette Tubles. And if you missed anything in the program or you just wanted to hear it again, you can find it on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And if you want to send us a comment, you can always reach out. Email is comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And tomorrow, we hope you'll join us for our monthly Music Maker feature. This time, we have the Red and Blues Band that is ready to join us tomorrow. We'll hear their rockin' sound and find out how they've done this year as a band, as entertainment, and just hear the reason for the music that they're making today. Hope you join us for that, and I hope you will continue to learn more about our Native Nations through some of these discussions, which can always be found at NativeAmericaCalling.com. I'm Tara Gatewood.
During the holidays, ask your family members about their medical history. Knowing their medical history can help you make decisions for your medical care. Contact your local Indian health care provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Service.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans available at 1-844-762-8483 or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.